Hi, I'm Dan Cottrell, editor of Rugby Coach Weekly. You're about to jump into one of our podcasts. If you want to find out more about this podcast and also all of the great content, drills, activities, games and advice on the website, then go over to www.rugbycoachweekly.net. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Maybe start them in a the defender in a disadvantaged position where it is quite hard for them to stop them, but there is still that information there. So you're not kind of, rather than say dribbling around a cone, you are still learning how to kind of, I suppose, coordinate your movements with another person, which is kind of what you need to be able to do in a game.
Rugby Coach Weekly presents The Coaching Knife, where we cut to the root, cut out the fluff, and challenge the masters of their domain to cut to the chase. Welcome to The Coaching Knife, when we cut to the root of the matter. In this episode, we speak to Philip O'Callaghan, PE teacher, tennis coach, arch blogger, Twitterer, focusing on his philosophy on developing people first and the skills will follow. We're going to cut to the root on how this looks in a practice scenario. Philip, are you ready for the knife?
Yeah, can't wait.
Okay. What, from the outside, will look different in your session to, say, a run-of-the-mill coach?
I suppose what my sessions would be, there wouldn't be too many kind of isolated drills involved in a session.
What do you mean by an isolated drill?
Isolated drill is when a player is performing, say, a movement without a context. So it could be like they're dribbling around cones or they...
So why does dribbling around cones not work? Because, I mean, I would have thought that there are some, there's some good things from dribbling around cones, like you're getting a bit of ball control. Well, we're talking football, obviously.
Yeah. No, good question. So, like, the way that, from my point of view, if we look at dribbling around a cone, it's missing a lot of, like, key information. So, like, if someone is dribbling in a game, if we want to make them better at dribbling in a game, they need to learn how to dribble when there's an opponent there, when there's a teammate there. So while ball control might be an element of how they would perform the skill, it won't make them, say, more skillful in the game.
Yeah, so I understand that little bit. But yeah. However, if I've never dribbled before and suddenly I've got lots of people running around in the box as well, I've got all that information to take on and I've got a dribble, will I be able to do both?
No, so the way that I would approach that then is it's a topic called scaling. So scaling means making the task easier without removing, or like a nice saying is kind of reduce without impoverishing. So reduce the kind of difficulty without removing what the important information would be. So like what you could do there, you could maybe give them a ball that would be easier to control than a normal soccer ball maybe. You could...
So then you become better at controlling a non-soccer ball and not a soccer ball?
Yeah, that's fine.
So that's not necessarily...
But like say with
becoming
tennis,
better at, because you've taken away the key bit. I mean, if we were doing tennis and you took away the tennis racket...
But that, it's not the same
tennis,
really, because like say it would be like using a futsal ball instead of a size 5. It's not... There's not a big difference between
them. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's just a slightly smaller ball.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a...
You're not dribbling around a marble or something.
No. You're not dribbling a rugby ball. It's just a slightly kind of...
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Right. So you change the size of the ball. So why does changing the size of the ball make a difference? I would have thought that trying to dribble a smaller ball might be more complicated than dribbling a bigger ball.
Yeah, you could make it bigger. You could make it, like, say, reducing or making the size of the ball easier for them to control is one aspect of it. You can also make the problem easier by reducing the numbers of the players. So obviously if you're in a 5 against 5 or 11 against 11, there's a lot of things happening. So you can reduce it down to maybe 1 against 1 or even 2 versus 1. So they have an advantage.
So when you say versus, then, so I've got somebody trying to stop me dribble.
Yeah. Or like, but you can even maybe start them in a the defender in a disadvantaged position where it is quite hard for them to stop them, but there is still that information there. So you're not kind of, rather than say dribbling around a cone, you are still learning how to kind of, I suppose, coordinate your movements with another person, which is kind of what you need to be able to do in a game.
Okay, so the players have obviously in the past dribble around cones. Does that mean that they're not getting any better, or is it just that they could be, you could get more out of them?
Yeah, so like the way I'd look at that problem is like if there was no other people there and you wanted to do something, then maybe there could be a bit of a benefit to it. But like players in the past also played loads of street football. They were outside playing all the time. So it wasn't as big an issue, I think, back maybe because they were playing so much more. Whereas kids nowadays, they're not actually really playing too much outside of training. So doing kind of isolated, decontextualized or whatever tasks, there's just better ways to spend your time during training, or maybe more advantageous ways when you actually have people there. If there was someone who had no one to practice with, no one there, then maybe that's better than doing nothing. But when you
when we've got players training, yeah, we've got to take advantage of the fact that there's somebody else at training. If you're going to go home and play with the football, then you obviously the context is going to be vastly reduced because you're just not going to have moving objects around in there. So in a team, it's more efficient to get to use the other team members to create what we can regard as the context. So just think about context then, because that sounds like a word that we need to say, let's make this more realistic. Is that right?
Yeah, so maybe even just think about it like maybe creating problems, similar problems that they may face in a game. So like, I suppose when I'm looking at my training, the goal of my training is to make the players better at playing the game, rather than just being able to produce movements, because there is just a bit of a, there is a big difference actually between the two.
So sorry, just, you know, there's a big difference between understanding the game and the movements.
Yeah.
So are you saying that if you want, you got to understand the game first and then do the movements, or the vice versa, or am I looking at it's the wrong argument altogether?
I would say that I would ask the question, why can't they learn the movements in a game context if you kind of make it at the right difficulty level? So even though it mightn't be exactly like a game of soccer, but by having the key information like the ball, opponents and things like that, your teammates, then I just think it's a more richer way to learn the skill rather than trying to say like reduce it down to running around cones and then introducing it to the game.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that we might get a bit bogged down with running around cones here.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sorry.
So if you had a game of soccer, football's obviously one which plenty of people can relate to. You've got, say, four people at training, for example, or four or five pit players. You would want to have defenders on the pitch right from the start of the training session. Of those four or five, at least one of them would be a defender.
I would say
to build some context, or would you say let's play with five attackers and you just got to score a goal?
Sorry, there's an announcement there. I'm not sure if it's coming up.
No, that's all right. Keep going.
I'm in school. Sorry.
Don't worry about that.
So with the way I would approach it is, for as much of the session as possible, or like for as much, like at least, like for most of my sessions, I'd say at least 90-95% of the session, there is some sort of opponent or some sort of something like that. So there are small elements of the session where there might not be an opponent, but it's not going to be the majority of the session. So like having, like say if we arrive, even in the warm-up, I'm trying to get them like solving problems or just interacting with other people. So like, I suppose another way to look at it is that like the sessions are very interactive, so they're interacting with different.
So you're talking about solving problems, but so what I'm worried about then is a player is trying to solve a problem, but they don't have, and I've used the word tools advisedly, they don't necessarily have the tools to be able to solve the problem. So let's say that the problem, and forgive my poor understanding of soccer, say the problem is I need to move the
ball. If you want to go to rugby, we can for...
No. I'm just... if I'm trying to play the ball quickly to another player.
Yeah.
Because that helps solve the problem. If I don't have the ability to strike the ball accurately and quickly and for the other player to control the ball, I'm never going to solve the problem.
Well, I suppose what I'd say is, how can we make that problem easier without taking away the important information?
Okay, so how would we make that problem easier? Because if I can't actually control the ball, how am I going to be able to then solve the problem?
So again, like I would use things like using different balls that are easier for them to control. Like a good example I had one day in PE class was I had this little girl that could not score in a basketball hoop. And I gave her a small ball that was lighter, able to throw, and she got it first time. And her face just absolutely lit up. And it was at a parent-teacher meeting, or it was at the open night, sorry. And that girl actually went up. She came down 20 minutes later with her dad holding her hand. She came over, asked me, could she have the smaller ball again? She came over, scored it again first time. And like, I'll never forget the look on her face. Whereas when I gave her the heavy ball, she couldn't do it. So it was kind of by making the problem easier for her, she was actually able to do it.
So I can see absolutely how that's going to build motivation because you're having success. But using a lighter ball, there's different movement skills because obviously you don't have to, with a heavier ball, if you're going to have it shoot a three-pointer, you're going to have to get a lot of your movement skills and strength to hit that. And that's going to be different from saying one which is from maybe a meter away. So how am I going to build that skill?
Yeah, so like I suppose like one way I'd look at it is like if a lot of the kids' sports are using like equipment that makes it very hard for them to do it. So I know with tennis, there's videos and like they actually have say like an under eight match and a professional match on, and the under eights are using a smaller court, smaller or bigger, like it's a heavier kind of bigger ball, and if you like put them over each other, it actually looks the same. Like the rallies are like the same time and stuff like that. So if you ask those under eights to play tennis with the heavy ball, big rackets, they won't be able to. But if you kind of scale it by giving them the right equipment, then they're actually well able to solve, or like they can actually say play the game, but with the equipment. So then because they're facing similar problems and stuff that they'd face when they're older.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about the similar problems then. So what you're saying is that let's look at the tennis context then. So you're playing on what we looks like a tennis court, but it is a different size. The net, I'm guessing, is lower.
Or way lower. Yeah,
the tennis rackets, age appropriate.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the game itself, they are doing, are they serving like they would, or they so it's overarm serving.
They are actually serving overarm, but it doesn't look like it will when they're say 12 or 13. It's still something that has to develop, but it does look like pretty much getting towards a proper serve. So like it's overarm, they're getting it in, stuff like that.
Moving forward on that, tennis then. So again, forgive my tennis understanding, but if you're trying to play a rally.
Yeah,
and obviously a rally is, you're not trying to create a rally. If one for one player, they're trying to win, so they would be maybe putting the ball to different parts of the court. What happens if you are in a situation, I'm thinking differentiation here, where one player can get the ball back, but the other player really struggles and sort of dollies it back or sort of just gets over the net, so the other player can't really strike the ball properly. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, that can be a tough one at times. So, like, again, it would depend on the ages of the players as well. Like, sometimes what you can do is you can set, I'd have two different challenges. So, because that player who just struggles to get it over, like, their goal is just to be able to get the ball over the net. Whereas the more, say, skilled player that can actually do it, maybe, like, I might give them an area, like say put maybe a hoop down that they have to try aim the ball into, and if it gets into there, it'll be easier for the other kid to hit it.
Right. Okay. So putting a hoop down on the court, some people might suggest that doesn't look like the game because there aren't hoops on the court.
Because
we've talked about dribbling around cones.
Yeah.
And now you're putting hoops on the court.
Yeah. I suppose there's two important things there. So the first one with like say the dribbling around cones one is just it was a kind of throwaway one at the start. But they're if you're dribbling around a cone, you're looking down at the cone, you're trying to dribble the ball around it. If there was a hoop down on the other side of the court that they're trying to get the ball into, the key information is still there. So their opponent is still there. the ball flight is still coming from over the other side of the net. And like, we're just kind of, I suppose, a word we'd use is like constraint. So we're adding a constraint that they have to, and I'm not saying they have
so
to.
So we're aiming a hoop, but yeah. I don't want to be looking at where the opponent is, like the cone.
But like when you're hit it, like say that's a target, you're not actually, you still.
So on the cone's on the ground here, a tug, because obviously you've got, when you're in football, yeah. You do need to look at the ball quite a lot. So the cone gives you some sort of cue as well to think about, because maybe that's the opponent is the cone, is their foot. So you've got to move around it.
I don't know, like it would be like, I don't think you can kind of compare the two examples very much, because like the hoop, say that I kind of just said there, is more of a target that they're hitting towards.
Right.
It's not like, it would be like, I don't know, in soccer, if you were, say, shooting at a goal, that if you hit it into a certain area of the goal, you got a reward. So like, I wouldn't say they have to hit the ball into the hula hoop. I'd say like, oh, if you get the ball into the hula hoop, it counts as three.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, so what sort of language are you using with the players then? Which you talked about constraint, but you're obviously not going to be saying constraint to a 10-year-old. But you're going to be using different language, or will the language be the same for all coaches? What sort of things are you saying to help these players progress now you're giving them the problems?
Yeah, so I suppose like I wouldn't really use like all the, like, there's a, say, there's a lot of language around skill acquisition that can be confusing. So like I rarely use it with players unless like they're kind of older and that I've been working with them for a while.
Okay.
And I'd usually try, like, say with the, usually say like if I was using say constraint, I wouldn't tell them it's a constraint, but I'd say like use some scoring to draw their attention towards it. So like what would be a good example? Say like in tennis, again, like just going back to that hoop example, if you get the ball into the hoop, you get three. Or like, do you know, if you hit the ball towards that target, if it goes into the target and you end up winning the point, it might be three. Like, that's not a great example of what it is. But like, I'm not saying they can't hit the ball anywhere else, but I'm really rewarding them for exploring how to do it.
All right. So the language you're using is, in a sense, I'm finding a reward for doing what you're doing.
Yeah. So, and like, I would use words like, oh, this is a problem, or this is, I have a challenge for you, or something like that. But I wouldn't ever, like, I don't think I would ever really use the word, this is the constraint.
Right. Okay. So for instance, we're going to set up an exercise. Let's say it's with 12-year-olds. So they've been playing the sport a little bit of part time. You're going to try, you in your mind, you've got a problem, you've got some constraints. How would you introduce that to them to make them feel that they were going to do something which was beneficial to them? What would that look like?
There are different ways to do it. So sometimes what I'd do is I'd actually present, at the start of the session, I'd have a game where that problem might be maybe frustrating them, or like make the problem even worse for them. And then maybe design a game then that like rewards them for how they solve, like say design that problem and rewards them for like different ways that they can solve them. So like, I wouldn't say this is the exact way you have to do it. Mm. Give them kind of maybe a bit more freedom to explore, because like, you'd be surprised how creative the players can be, or like the solutions that you might see that you mightn't have even thought of. So,
I would have thought that was probably going to be unlikely though, isn't it? I mean, really, there's lots of different ways to deal with things, but there's really, let's say Agassi, he's very, very old. I'm just trying to think of Federer. Yeah. There will be generally only a few ways that he will try and win a point when a opponent is in a certain place.
Yeah. So like, I suppose.
So you're not going to say I can use a forehand or a backhand. You can hit it across the court, or you can hit it down the court, or you hit it over them. So within that, there aren't going to be. I mean, I'm not suggesting you tell the players.
Yeah,
but really, there's only going to be one or two ways that they're going to be able to hit the ball when they're in a certain place.
Yeah, so like there are times where the way that they can hit it is going to be limited. So like there's less options for them to perform the skill successfully. And it's generally if like on the harder or on the trickier shots, the amount of options you have will go way down. But you still like say, for example, I know I don't want to get too into tennis, but like say you
I don't mind.
If the ball's on your forehand, you can there's loads of different spins you can put on it. You can slice it, you can hit top spin, you can hit it flat, you can hit it high, low.
Yeah.
You can hit it.
But there's still only say 10 to 15 options.
Okay.
Well, anyway, so we could go into lots of these. This has been brilliant. Really, really enjoyed it and great. So Phil runs this fantastic Substack, or if you can follow him on Twitter at Mr_Tennis_Coach. Really useful breakdowns of skill acquisition areas. So definitely jump into that. So his philosophy is develop people first and the skills will follow. Yes, you can contact him at Mr_Tennis_Coach, or his Substack is Mr. Tennis Coach without any underscores. And we're going to finish with some quick fire questions. So Philip, how old are you?
26.
And after this one, feeling a lot older probably. What's the coaching book by your bedside?
At the moment, it's a book called Anatomy of Agility.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's by?
Franz Bosch.
Right. Okay. What or which coach teacher are you loving at the moment?
I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'm going to say Mikel Arteta.
Right, okay, yeah. Excellent. I'm glad you said that at the end or on the front of this, because Spurs fans would have immediately switched off. Which team, sport or subject would you love to coach at the moment? Obviously, you're coaching tennis. What else would you love to be doing?
See, I suppose with the P job, I get to experience a lot of other ones as well. If I had to get into another sport, it would probably be... I don't know, the Irish sport hurling. I don't know if you...
No, that sounds good to me. Yeah. Who's inspired you most?
There's a lot of different people that would have, say, inspired me over the years. But I suppose I got a lot from people that were sharing stuff online. So I suppose like one of the first podcasts I started listening to was Rob Gray's. So I'll say Rob.
Yeah, Rob, and brilliant and well worth digging in. I mean... there are hundreds that he's done and a fantastic array of very interesting podcasts. So definitely worth listening to Rob. What would you tell your 20-year-old self to do more of? And to flip, you're the youngest guest I've had so far, so it's not very far away.
It was around this time last year that I kind of started sharing a lot of stuff online. And what I found, like, while you're sharing stuff, what the most valuable thing is, like, you end up, like, kind of getting into conversations and stuff with different people. So like even while you're starting to share and kind of get out there, you start to meet some really, really good people. So I kind of encourage people to maybe start sharing their ideas and reaching out to people, because the vast majority of people are more than happy to kind of help you or to kind of have conversations. So it's really valuable.
Yeah, and it's been brilliant. It's been a brilliant conversation. And Philip, thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you. We'll be right back.